When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
On July 6, 2022, James Caan passed away. In the immediate wake of his death, I personally couldn't think of anything worse than having his towering presence in many of his incredible and memorable films on my screen. The only way I could find a way out of my grief after being rattled by his passing was to bring together an incredibly generous group of contributors to share their heartfelt thoughts about James Caan and arguably the performance of his career with Thief. Thank you so much to the contributions across this special double episode series on One Heat Minute Productions from Jen Johans, Alexi Toliopoulos, S.A. Cosby, Travis Woods, Jordan Harper, Jedediah Ayers, William Boyle, Bilge Ibiri, Sean Burns, Walter Chaw, Scott Derrickson, and his co-star in Thief, Jim Belushi. This is part two of One Thief Minute. We dive straight in to more memorable scenes, more Peckinpah-style deaths, and ruminations on the void left by James Caan.
A nice baby. You're lucky you got such a nice baby, huh?
Thank you. Thank you very much. Can you warm this up?
No problem. Way's name, huh?
No name, not yet.
So, here we are.
Are you okay?
Long time. You see that? Oakwood dies and our baby is born.
Do you want to name him after Oakland?
Oakland's real name was David.
David.
Hey.
Our kid, his name is David.
David? David, good name.
Hey, David. What's to it?
If I may say one more thing, which is what I always do. There's two restaurant scenes with Jesse and Frank in Thief. And the one obviously that we've spoken about, that's the one that gets all the press. That's because it's the most special of the two. But there is a sequence when Frank is sitting with Jesse and their newly adopted black market child. And Frank's mentor, Okla, aka David Perrineau, has just died. And you can tell that Frank is kind of rocked. He's like, so here we are. And they haven't even named this kid yet. They haven't named this child. They're sitting in this Chinese restaurant. They don't know what the kid's name is. And the waiter comes up. He's like, hey, you know, can I heat up the baby's milk for him and all that? What's the baby's name? And Frank's like, well, we don't know yet. We don't know. Brushes the guy off, doing the tough guy thing. Again, being the tough guy, he's trying to be the tough guy with Jesse and trying not to be upset that David is dead, that his mentor, played by Willie Nelson, is dead. And they start talking, you know, well, we don't have a name for this kid. And it's Jesse in this moment of really sweetness. He says, why don't we name him David, you know, after Okla? And oh my God, there's this flicker on Khan's face. I'm going to try not to get emotional talking about it. But there's this moment where he's like, you want to name our child, the child that we share, after something this special to me? And you realize it's in that moment. He's like, holy fuck, you actually love me, don't you? You love me that much. You'd name our son after something that's important to me. Mm. Like he said, because it also calls back to their first date at that diner where he says, this is the cycle. We live, we die, we make children, they go on. And he realizes, You remembered what I said about the cycle. You remembered Okla's dead, David is dead, and you want to name our son, this thing that we are going to have together. You want to name him David. And it's almost like he can't believe that someone would care about him enough to remember that. And that's so fucking sweet. And watch how he talks to that waiter at the beginning of the scene, just kind of the regular brusque Frank. But then when the waiter comes back with the drink for the baby. There's this moment where like Frank smiles ear to ear, which you almost never see in the movie. He goes, hey, my kid's name is David.
He is David.
And there's something so sweet. And you know, the waiter's like, that's good. It's a good name. David, good name. That is my second favorite scene in all of the scenes of this movie, of all the cool scenes to pick. For me, it's that moment because he goes through that journey again where he reveals to us again, you know, he's just this guy with a gigantic heart who is just terrified that heart is going to get hurt. So he does all this tough guy bullshit to protect it, but that he found someone like Jesse who can disarm him to the point where all she has to say is, well, his name is David. And that he so changes his demeanor, his public demeanor, willing to talk to this waiter and be like, hey, my kid's name is David. Because, you know, earlier he had said the kid hadn't been named yet. Goddamn, that is the magic of this movie. And I know because we're doing One Heat Minute Productions. And so this is a Michael Mann-centric universe we're in right now. So Thief is the movie we have to talk about. But I'm also talking, we have to talk about Thief because Thief is the movie that shows all of this so adroitly, where there are just so many examples of Khan doing this thing that I believe is the reason why we love him, which is that he's that guy or that person who, you know, there's something beneath the ice. You know that there's something underneath there, of underneath the jokes or the arms length stuff or whatever he, whatever people use to keep other people at a distance. He's one of those that you know that there's something underneath there. And if you can, and the crazy thing, that the thing that's so, I think, special about Jesse is that there's something about her that just immediately kind of disarms that and lasers through. She can kind of see him. And goddamn.
Also, it comes close, but it also kind of borders on transaction or showing his status or what he has or that he's acquired something. But that moment when he's with Tuesday Weld and the baby that they've just acquired, but like she has to get the baby, essentially, we don't really see him bond with it. And she's the one holding the child, where they go out for Chinese food and the waiter asks, you know, what is your kid's name? And he doesn't have one. And then they arrive on David because it's Okla's real name. He brings him back over here and he's like, this is David. And it's, you know, both a proud moment because that is in honor of his friend and it's his child, but it's also like, look at me and my family. I'm acquiring this stuff in my collage. So it's kind of at the border of being vulnerable, but also wanting to acquire and being in a race, like he's in the middle of a heist, essentially trying to get everything done before the alarm goes off in his own life.
At the time, it was, I mean, Michael could speak to this better, but my understanding was at the time MGM made the movie. Mm. And the way they looked at the movie was that, oh, this is a blue collar film.
Yeah.
And so they packaged it and sold it as kind of a blue collar action film, opposed to what it was, which was an auteur, one of his finest works. You know, I mean, they had a great French film style to an English. He was, you know, Michael studied in England and France, and he really brought that artistic auteur feel to it. I mean, it was like any one of those great movies. What was the other one I was thinking of? It was like, well, it'll come to me. So they didn't sell it as an Academy Award type movie.
Yeah.
Which it was. I thought James Caan should have easily been nominated for an Academy Award. And I thought Robert Prosky, to this date, is still the best bad guy I've ever seen on film. Those two should have been nominated. Michael should have been, the photography should have been nominated. But MGM made a big marketing mistake and it just kind of slowly fell and became a great cult movie, but didn't get the attention that it was deserved because one guy in a marketing office.
As much as I love 70s movies and early 80s movies, I mean, I think there are some movies I go back to now, and sometimes like one thing that hits me wrong is the score. Like the score just will be off or won't match the vibe of the movie. And so when you really notice, like, you know, Sorcerer and Thief, like those are movies where the score is just, yeah, Manhunter, just kind of things that really, you know, bring the movie to another level. Yeah, they contribute in not just like a quiet way, but in a really explosive way. It's just incredible.
You know, I saw Thief. Travis and I went and saw Thief with Michael Mann, answering questions afterward. And I wish I had more memories to tell you other than the fact that he remembers everything and talked about film stock and, you know, shot lists and things like that. But the one thing that he said that really stuck with me, because to me, I don't know how I'd feel about the movie if this had happened, is he talked about how his initial instinct was to do an all blues rock soundtrack.
Yeah.
And I think that soundtrack is one of the, it's one of the all time great soundtracks, that Tangerine Dream, and they've done a lot, but that to me is probably their best. And it's so defining, it's so iconic, and it helps contribute to that thing I was talking about of the dream of when you lean in and you lock in, and that music that doesn't totally fit the world that they in. Obviously, nobody in that movie listens to Tangerine Dream.
No.
Which is not that's not the job of a soundtrack, is to play the music that the actors listen to or that the characters would listen to. It's just to you know, soundtrack exists purely to like speak to your subconscious and draw you into the film. That's my opinion. And maybe it'll tell you to be scared at certain moments, but that to me is very secondary than just adding to the dream and pulling you in. And the music and the beauty, because it is a beautiful movie. And again, not to just repeat myself, but it's that beauty that comes out of the darkness, which is why I think the beach scene plays is so unrealistic almost. And they are so clearly in another world because there are no shadows. They are just on a sunlit beach where the beauty is just apparent and around them and therefore kind of blasé. And they're just there for this weird little moment in time of like, yes, we have this one perfect moment that isn't real. We're not in our homes. We're in this world that looks nothing like the rest of the world of the film. And
it's a fantasy. It's a fantasy moment for anyone with shoulder hair. It's the height of shoulder hair in the world, in cinema, in history, when you can wear white slacks on a beach and strut around in shoulder hair. Just
he has epaulettes.
Stunning. Stunning. He walks along. I had a very particularly hairy friend, shout out to Johnny, who like I shared that a still from that, and he goes, "What a time to be alive. I was like, true. Dude, you belong on that beach. Some white slacks, baby. You belong right there.
So you put on the shirt and it puffs out, you know, it's a form of cooling, I suspect.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Here's Jim Belushi with his recollections of his first and iconic cinematic death, and working alongside James Caan, and his care and tenderness and support for the safety of his fellow actors.
You know, it's funny, I'm so glad you noticed that, because when people talk about my death, they talk about me going into the vat of acid.
No.
I'm like, what do you mean? I was like, water? I held my breath. You know, I mean, it's just water. I want the stunt.
The stunt's before that.
So because of that first meeting with Michael, and I said, I'd like to death. I want to die in film. We were shooting. I mean, we were rehearsing and prepping at, in Chicago at the Davy Pier. Back then it was nothing. It was just kind of a storage place. Anyway, they had I met Michael there, and he introduced me to Walter Scott, tall guy, Texan, 6'5", cigar, or not cigar, he was chewing, you know. And Michael goes, this is Jim Belushi. He's playing the role of Barry. He wants to do his own stunt. And then Michael turned and bolted. And I'm looking at this guy, and he goes, oh, shit. You're an actor. Yeah. You're not a stuntman, are you? No. How do you take a hit in the stomach? And I went, he goes, no. All right, try this. No. shit. All right, well, they get you hit in the stomach, you fall over on the car, and they shoot you. And I was like, well, Walter, you know, with all due respect, and I don't think that's very cool.
No.
That's not a cool death. I mean, can you do something a little bit more than that? Jesus. Well, I mean, I'm athletic. I'm strong. I'm young. I mean, I can do it. I can do it. I really want to do it. I really want to do it, Walter. Please let me do a good death scene. And he got so mad at me. 3 days later, I come back to that set. And he designed a thing where I'm right out of the movie. Handcuffed, getting beat up. I break away. I run. I get shot in the back. He has a tire where I work my right foot onto the tire as I get shot so I can do a turnaround, like because of the shot would turn my body, right?
Yeah.
And then they shoot me 2 times in the front. And then he had a harness around my, you know, mid, my pelvic, with a rope that went up over that white van into a tree and a pulley. And 3 of the biggest teamsters on the set holding on to it. So when I got shot, I had a blood bag in my back that was filled with hamburger meat and blood. And I had 27 squibs on me. The squibs are little explosive things, right?
Yeah.
So those squibs, I had to be shot, pulled, squibs going off, the hamburger and the blood hitting the side of the van, and then yanked into the van, bounced off the van onto the ground. Oh, beautiful ballet of death.
It's a Peckinpah death.
It was so great. It was like, Walter Scott, I thought you didn't like, well, you seem eager, I guess, you know. And it was great. I got a Stuntman's Booster Association sticker. The stunt guys liked me. I mean, the reason they always wanted the stunt guy to do is because stunt guy get paid. They get paid extra. And they don't want to take money from their buddies, you know. I go, I don't want stunt money. I just want to be able to do my own stunt.
Yeah.
So the interesting story about that death scene.
Yeah, there's something you've said before, which is the thing that I think you're leading to now.
Well, what happened was I had 27 squibs. And back then, every squib was wired. And so down my pants, there were all these wires that came out at the ankle and went over to the special effects guy when he was hitting all the triggers. So on my death, it was just a wide angle lens. And they panned down to see my sprawled dead body. Every shot, I don't know how the DP missed it. They didn't have monitors back then. I mean, they might have had them, but we didn't have them. I don't know how the DP missed not seeing those wires coming out.
Yeah.
So now it's like, you know, a month later, whatever, we're in LA shooting. And he goes, Jimmy, we got to reshoot the death. I said, shit, man. Yeah, I love that. So they set up it was in LA. They made it look just like that parking lot. They set up the van. Oh, which, by the way, let me go back. The van had metal in the middle, right? Framing.
Oh, no.
So they took that metal out. So when I hit that van, it gave. Otherwise, they would have broke my back. Very detailed work. So I do, they can blood me up. I do a little fake run and try to, you know, all I got to do is run into the van and throw my back into it and fall. I don't have to do the whole stuff. And there's blood on the pavement. And so now we're ready to shoot. And I am like, I got it in my head. I am ready, like a football player, ready to explode to get as much power as I could to get up as high as I could on that, throw myself up in that van. And what happened was I slipped on the blood. Oh. And so I didn't get as high as I wanted onto the van. And I fell on my back. And I was livid that they didn't clean that blood up. So the look on my face when you see that shot of me dying is me pissed at the fucking prop guy. Right? I'm like, oh, shit. And then I thought, oh, well, I'll just die and we'll do another take, right? And so then I just dropped. Right? Cut. And I'm like, all right, let's do another one, man, because I slipped and, you know, oh, that was great, Jimmy. That was great. I go, but I could have gotten hired. No, Jimmy, we got what we need. I go, and I know, but I wasn't acting. I was thinking about the prop guy. It doesn't matter what you were thinking. It looked great.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Your real anger there. Your real anger.
I was pissed. I was pissed. Like, I'm doing my job. You should do your job. Come on, man.
That's such a great story. Also, because it's like, they didn't clean the blood on the pavement feels like a story that could be in almost any Michael Mann movie. They didn't clean the blood properly on the pavement for the next stunt.
Michael, I just loved Michael Mann. I mean, there was a... Michael had a vision of a material for my Hawaiian shirt that shot in one scene on the rooftop in LA. Oh,
yeah.
With the black, I can't remember the name of the flower. Anyway. And I remember being with Michael and a costumer coming with shirts. No. Now we're getting to shoot this damn thing, right? No, that's not what I want. And then now she brings a book with material. And he went that. So she had to order the material, build the shirt for one scene. And it was just, Michael would never, ever settle for anything less than his vision. Never. I fucking love him. He set the standard for me, you know, like never settle. Never. It's got to be authentic. It's got to be real. Never. He was awesome.
You tell a great story about Jimmy when you first did that stunt, when you were wired up before the second blood on the pavement, where one of the squibs got you.
Well, what happened was I was wearing a jacket.
Yes.
Like a baseball jacket, right? Green, beautiful. I still have it. And they put the squibs in the jacket. They loaded the jacket and they put it on me. And their squibs were right here, right, for the first shot. So in the first take, I have the handcuffs on. I run, the shot goes off, and as I turn, my handcuffed arms go up over my head.
Yes.
In order for them to see these two shots come across at my chest. Well, if you can even see my shirt, when my arm goes up, it pulls the coat up.
Yeah.
And the squibs went right into my neck. There's just a little gunpowder. It wasn't like a big deal. Jimmy, I got up. Jimmy walked over to me. He grabbed my chin like he was angry at me and turned my head and pushed it up and he looked at my skin. And he went fucking silent. He was so mad that they didn't care for his fellow actor. And he turned away and he started moving his hand. I couldn't hear what he said. Anyway, the next take, what they did is they took a piece of cloth, cut a hole in the bottom of the coat, and tied it around my belt. So when I went up, the stage...
Stay stationary, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Then at the end of the night, all the stunt guys who didn't like me at first because they took a guy at one of their buddies' jobs, oh, they gave me patches, they gave me whiskey, they gave me some, a couple painkillers. Like, oh, I don't know. They go, oh, yeah, you will tomorrow. It's going to feel like you were in a car accident. I didn't really take them, but, you know, they were sweet, you know.
Now, to the legacy of Thief and James Caan.
And I think that's what makes that movie more than just a great heist film, or more than just whatever, a genre exercise, a great Tangerine Dream soundtrack, you know, a vehicle. I think it's those moments, and with his mentor Willie Nelson, you know, that really quick scene. You know, I think it's those moments where it's really about the briefness, to your point, of life and of living and of imagining that. We will never look back on our lives and wish we'd worked more, right? We'll always go back and wish we'd had that conversation, that we'd been honest with ourselves, we'd been able to be honest. And so Caan is like this dense, radioactive, almost distillation of masculinity in all of its forms. When he is broken down and when he's being honest, it's more pure than if you were just somebody else. If it was Montgomery Clift, it's like, well, of course, or Anthony Perkins. He's been in the whole freaking movie being like this. But with James Caan, it's almost like if it was Robert Mitchum all of a sudden in the middle of, you know, a movie sort of saying, or in the middle of Pursuit, having this heartfelt, painful, vulnerable conversation with Teresa Wright. You can't almost imagine it, right? Because they're so manly. And I think, you know, what he reminds me of physically and in terms of the physical space that he occupies, James Caan, was, you know, some combination of like Gene Kelly and Burt Lancaster, these guys that were acrobats and amazing athletes, and their physicality is almost overwhelming on screen. But I don't know that Gene Kelly, even though he played a couple of gangsters, was ever convincing as a gangster. Yeah. I don't know that Burt Lancaster was ever convincing as a romantic lead, even though he was in From Here to Eternity. There's always something in play acting about that. They were never quite vulnerable enough to be those things. But James Caan could be those things. He's a compelling romantic lead. Yeah, he's like this. He's all testosterone, including the parts where we're really broken by testosterone, poisoned by it. You know, it's the tragedy of his inability to show love in any other way than the way he shows it. You know, you see it in his older roles, older in his life, even in Elf, his most well-known perhaps to this generation. It's like, he's this crusted over, bitter, I'm not going to print the last page of the storybook for kids and for nuns, I don't care, it's all about, you know. Yeah, he's this guy, he made it to Santa's naughty list, right? That encapsulates it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And yet when push comes to shove, there's a reason someone as lovely as Mary Steenburgen is married to him. There's something there. You know, or the gang boss in Dogville, or the father in Flesh and Bone, the great Steve Kloves film. There's something happening here that he even can't quite access, but we see it. And there's the tragedy of men not ever being able to become more than brutal is what James Caan was for me. And what he is in Thief, what he is in all of his movies is that tragic missed opportunity. You know, it makes total sense to me that Sonny had to die and never did when I was a kid, because he's the coolest. But it makes sense to me now, going back to The Godfather. It's like, yeah, I mean, the whole film is about the tragedy of never being able to quite live up to, you know, the promise of the American dream, you know, but also the promise of an individual in living up to the ideals that they set forward for themselves about family and honor. And so, of course, Sonny had to go. You know, Sonny is our collective, you know, James Caan is our collective avatar for the failure of masculinity. And guy, he was good.
You remember Thief for the intricate heist, for the overall atmosphere, the Chicago outfit, this sort of 80s aesthetic, but 70s spirit, so to speak.
Yes.
And that's wonderful. I love that. I love that that sort of combination in the movie. Well, for me, what always drives me is, you know, the character of Frank and when he sends Tuesday Wells' characters off with her child and gives them a bunch of money and has somebody take him out of town. And that look on his face when he's saying these really harsh things to her, you know, this it's over. We're not going to get married. It's like my heart breaks for him in that moment. It really does. Because it's like if this was your best chance at finding that happiness, no matter what happens in the final showdown, your life is over. His life is over. He's never going to feel that way about anybody else again. Never going to allow himself to feel that way about anybody else again. And I think for me, for somebody who writes a lot about male tragedy and the yoke of masculinity, it's heartbreaking. And I think Khan does that, like I said, better than anybody else. And then with you put that character within this overall kaleidoscope of the movie, which is with its incredible visuals, with an incredible cinematography, the way color and light is used to sort of exemplify Frank's emotions and how he feels, you know, the cold white arc light of the welding torch when they're cutting into the safe, or when him and Tuesday Wells' character go on a date, and the way the light plays through the car as he's driving through town, through the city, and he's taking her to dinner, and how it's warm and inviting. And so as a technical achievement, Thief is amazing. Like I said before on our friend Jen Jones' wonderful podcast, you know, Thief to me is the grandfather of the neon noir movement. Movies like Drive or Direct Debt to Thief, you can trace that lineage like a family tree.
I don't know if Michael Mann has ever said this out loud, but I will say that Thief is clearly a movie about Hollywood. It is clearly a movie about Hollywood. Leo is a studio head who is talking to an independent artist about coming aboard and making a studio film or TV show or what have you. It is so clearly an expression of, you know, Michael Mann's own personal fierce professionalism and independence of vision, and his fear of giving that up in exchange for money and security and all that, which is a huge part of, if you care about those things and you want to work in Hollywood, this is a thing that eats at you all the time. And I think probably at that point in his career where he's on the upswing and he can see that other path that like a lot of other people could have taken, I think particularly somebody who is both an artist but has populist tastes, who wants to make heist films, but also wants to say something at the same time, that's a very difficult lane to be in. You know, if you just want to make popcorn movies and you don't think about this stuff, and if you just want to make avant-garde four-hour-long movies that are black and white, you don't think about this. But it's this middle thing of like trying to do something and do it as well as Michael Mann does it and with the care that he does it, but also to have, you know, the resources that he clearly wants to make a movie like Thief or Heat or Ali or The Insider that are, you can't make by crowdfunding or by just, you know, raising money with dentists or something like that. You have to go to the studios to do it. And, you know, they pitch you exactly the way that, you know, Leo pitches them. We'll take care of you. Of course you can do whatever you want. Of course you can quit whatever. We're here for you. We're here to help you. And it's that contradiction that, again, maybe Mann's never said that out loud, but he might not even know, but I think he probably does know that Thief is absolutely a movie about Hollywood.
And I loved watching him age into older versions of the characters that I always, you know, was introduced to him in. You know, I love him in something like Way of the Gun, where he's this, you know, members only jacket and, you know, talking about being an old man in this game, you know, and I like to think of it as a sequel to something like Thief, where, you know, oh, this is the character I've been watching for, you know, 30 years come back, and he's still knocking around, and he's still formidable, did he wear a tie in any performance? And if so, was it not to the tie?
I don't think he ever.
Yeah, I think he just woke up every day, put on a shirt and said, fuck you, Top Button. not going to happen. And, you know, the rest of
not
you
get today, in line Top Button.
Twos. Yeah.
You know, I love what you said about it being a sequel, The Way of the Gun, because I tend to think of like Honeymoon in Vegas as What If Sonny Had Lived.
<That's>
Essentially,
funny.
Because, yeah, you guys have all seen Honeymoon in Vegas, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I love him in that. That was the first movie I ever saw with James Caan as a girl. And even as a girl, there was that animal magnetism about him where you're like, well, obviously Sarah Jessica Parker belongs with Nicolas Cage. But I could see somebody totally going for James Caan. Like, he could steal her away in a minute. He has that twinkle in his eye. Yes, he's a gangster. He's scary. But he's James Caan. I mean, I can see that.
It's the equivalent to Paul Newman in Nobody's Fool. It's like, oh, yeah, he could steal a girl from Bruce Willis. He could.
Oh, fuck yeah.
He could. It's yep. It's so fucking believable. It's like, oh, my God. Like, he could take my wife today. Leave the
yes.
kids. See ya.
I haven't seen Honeymoon in Vegas since the 90s, but there's one scene I still remember so vividly. I've been meaning to watch it again because it was the hardest I laughed in the whole movie. He's on the phone, I think it's with Johnny Roast Beef from Goodfellas, and they're in the middle of a sentence and he's just like, are you goddamn eating again? He gets so mad.
Yes.
It's just that great 0 to 75.
There are so many good lines. I mean, Sarah Jessica Parker has my favorite one. You took me to Las Vegas and you turned me into a whore, Jack. I mean, it's just great.
Unable to be anything but yourself, sorry. And I think that is, you know, that's kind of the star. That's the sign of a movie star. But because he wasn't necessarily always doing movie star parts, he was able to bring that kind of quality to a lot of other movies. I watched, after he passed away, I finally watched Hide in Plain Sight, the film that he directed and stars in. And it's a lovely little movie. It's so funny because apparently it was just completely dismissed when it came out as being just, you know, uninteresting, unexciting, bland, dry. And it's so funny because maybe it says something about the state of our cinema today that I was watching. I'm like, this is not dry at all. This is like a real fucking movie. Put it up today, it would win Oscars, you know? But you know, there too, he plays this kind of working class guy who has a tough streak, but really, you know, he's getting completely screwed over by the system. And he's, you know, I mean, he's a guy with a job and everything. It's actually the other characters are kind of involved in crime and stuff like that. So he's not the guy who's like the emissary from the underworld for once, you know. He's actually like the ordinary man. But he's so convincing in it. He's so good because you realize there's just that, you know, it's that ordinary quality. He's always had that, you know. And I think that's what made him so convincing in those other parts too, where he is playing kind of, you know, a character that we might think of as being other, right? Thief, yes. Like Frank and Thief. But he comes in and it's just like a guy, you know? And he's immediately convincing. I mean, he did so many parts that I'm sure there were some, but like, I look over his filmography and there's nothing that, I don't remember any part that he did where he wasn't convincing as the person he was playing.
Yeah.
Some performances were better than others. He was always convincing. He was always like, right, James Caan is the guy. I got it, you know? So yeah, I think he's just a really special actor. And it's funny how, you know, we'll talk about someone like De Niro, for example, taking on parts that seem beneath him, even yes. though they're starring parts, but they're like, you know, goofy comedy, or, you know, he's playing the bad grandpa or whatever, you know, like he's doing these parts. And the thing that you forget is they're not doing those parts because they've stopped caring. They're doing those parts because that's kind of the only thing that's available to you when you're a star of that caliber, right? I mean, that's the thing that's the only thing that's available to you after a certain age. You're a star of that caliber, so you still have to take on a big part, right?
Yes.
And what's available is
bad grandpa, know,
dirty grandpa, or bad grandpa. Which there's War with Grandpa. There's
I don't know which one's which. I don't know which
one. One of them is Johnny Knoxville, and two of them are De Niro. But I forget which one is which. They're all good. No, I mean, all performances are good. But then Khan, you look at Khan and it's like his career kind of, I mean, he kept working. It's not like it wasn't constantly working. His career flagged a little bit because he didn't take on these bigger parts. But whenever he was on screen, it was, oh, James Caan doing a James Caan part. So that was the trade-off. Like he did his share of goofy comedies, but he was James Caan in those parts, you know? He would never have done an Intern, you know, but he would have done Elf.
And I gotta do it. I'm sorry, Blake. I gotta circle back around to it. What's so great about it is for all of its exaggerated kind of ridiculousness, literally telling someone that you just went on a first date with, hey, like, come marry me. What the fuck, dude? Like, that is such a red flag. That is such a red flag.
It's just, like, it's like a Matador's red flag.
There is no bigger red flag than a first date ending with a marriage proposal. That's not good. But it carries with it just as unreal as it is, it carries with it a kind of gritty reality. And I'm gonna make a shameless plug for a movie written by a really, really good friend of mine, Palm Springs, which is about as far away from Thief as you can get.
Good movie.
It's a very good movie. My buddy Andy wrote it, and it deals with existentialism, and it deals with two people who aren't sure if they should be together or not. But there's a line at the end of that movie that actually made me think of the diner scene in Thief, and it made me think of Jesse and Frank and what actually makes that sequence so realistic in a way.
Yeah.
Which is, even though we all know it's pretty unrealistic, but still, you know, that in Palm Springs, it's two characters stuck in a time loop who can't decide if they should be together or not, with the time loop kind of being a metaphor for just what life is in general, which is what every day kind of feels the same. And at the end of the movie, the male character, he makes a big play and he's just like, look, I want to be with you. I love you. I'm crazy about you. I know I drive you kind of nuts. And I can't help it. He does the Frank thing where he's just like, I'm laying it on. I'm going to lay all my vulnerabilities out. I'm going to be way too much right now. And I'm just going to say everything. And the woman he's saying it to, she's like, well, what if we get sick of each other? And he's like, we're already sick of each other. It's the best. But she counters with something that feels very Jesse and Frank-esque, in which she says, you know, I was doing just fine before I met you. As if to say, you know, if nothing comes of me and you, like, I was doing just fine, I'll continue to do just fine. The way she's like, you know, I got a life. I got a social security number in Thief. She's like, yeah, I got a very nice, even, calm life. But in Palm Springs, this character says, you know, I was doing just fine before I met you. She pauses and she says, but there is a chance that this life might be a little less mundane with you in it. And there's something about that line that always makes me think of Frank and Jesse. And I think that that is kind of a really good metaphor for the gritty reality of Frank and Jesse's relationship and why they would get together so quickly as they do in Thief. And I think it's a really good expression of why we love James Caan. James Caan is that kind of performer where, you know what, as an audience, we were getting by fine. We'll get by fine without Thief if we didn't have it. We'd get by just fine without Frank or James Caan in our lives. But he made things and he made cinema a little less mundane and a lot more exciting by being in it. And that's why we love him, is that he, you know, it's not like we need any actor. It's not like we need any one movie in our lives, but he made things a little less mundane. He made things a little bit more special. And he was a part of something special with us. And that's why we're always gonna remember him.
We really, between takes and stuff, we would sit together, you know, and he was very, he was very troubled at the time. He was going through a divorce and he loved his son so deeply. And, you know, you could see a little, distraction, you know, in his eyes. You know, there was some sadness here and there, but that he didn't really talk about it, but you know.
It was weighing on him.
It was weighing on him, and he did talk about it in the sense like, you know, don't let it bother you, but I'm a little, you know, hey man, whatever. So we sat in silence a lot, you know. He was, he loved this boy, and he loved his cowboys. He loved riding. He loved, you know, I mean, all the stunt guys were like cowboys that he would rope with, you know. He loved that. His hand was really swollen one time from holding a rope. And they didn't like him doing that. I remember Michael saying something one time about Michael's very gentle, very beautiful with actors. Here's a director that loves actors. And I never had any problem with him at all. He was just so loving and gentle and direct and directed me, corrected me. And, Jimmy was going through a turbulent time. And Michael said, it doesn't matter. It's okay. No matter what's going on with him, all we need is what happens in his eyes between action and cut. And he's delivering that. You know?
God, he's delivering it.
He's delivering it. I mean, James was, I am the last person in the world you want to fuck with. I do not. Remember, no contractions.
No contractions.
I do not. Asshole. He is an asshole. Tuesday Wild. Wow.
I mean, we all love Khan. We all might have our reasons for it. That's just mine. But I think that that's what made him such a special performer, is he's the kind of performer you don't expect to be vulnerable. He's the kind of performer you don't expect to be vulnerable. And he's the kind of person you meet in life that you hope will be.
Yeah.
And so when he gives that to you, and when he shows that to you, you're like, oh, fuck, God. This is what I wanted to see. This is what I knew there was someone underneath there. And I think also, you know, there are those of us who can kind of keep people at arm's length and who can kind of hold people at a distance. And those of us who do that, when you watch this scene, it does feel like, goddamn, like you look for that kind of connection. You want that kind of connection. You want to be able to talk to someone who puts you at ease enough, or who is special enough to put you at ease, so that you can be like, yeah, can I just quit being a dick for 2 seconds? And, as fun as it is, I mean, you also, you know, you want someone that you can bust balls with and make jokes with. But I think that there's that moment in that 10 minute. And that's why I think man gives it 10 minutes of real estate in his film, because he understands how important it is, which is, you know, because God, you don't want to imagine that their marriage is just nothing but these conversations, these insanely heavy conversations, because I'm like, who wants that? But the fact that they are able in the middle of the night to kind of, if only for that 10 minute stretch, and even if they never bring it up ever again, in their time together, there is that one moment where they look each other in the eye. That's what it is. They look each other in the eye and they square with each other. Look, this happened to me. You need to know it. This is why I am the way I am. And she does this. Because, you know, women are always braver. Jesse does it first by saying, hey, look, this is who I am. This is the shit I went through. I'm not who you think I am. Like, I went through some shit. And the fact that he's able to be like, oh, shit, I understand. Shit is what I understand. I get it. So, and just so you know, this is what I fucking went through. And the fact that they both are able to do that and look each other in the eye, that's what makes them special. That's what makes him special to her.
But I think what you the thing that you just said, though, about feeling like you maybe couldn't watch him after learning that he had died, I think it gets to that thing I talked about, the this strain of pathos that runs through his parts.
Yes.
Where you really feel for these characters that he plays. Like, you really feel for them. I mean, there's something just very deeply sad about them, sad and desperate about them. So much so that whenever I watch Thief, I'm just so worried about what's going to happen to him. More so than I am in any Michael Mann movie.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, my love for Michael Mann films is, you know, that's
famous.
This is not the place for me to try and prove that, right? And it's not, Thief is probably not even in my top three or four Michael Mann movies. And yet, Thief is the one where I'm just like, oh, fuck, please let him be okay. You know? And I think that gets to James Caan's presence. It gets to, obviously, the quality of his performance. And I think it also gets to this thing, which is, you know, when you watch Thief, it's funny because some people come to Thief later after seeing other Michael Mann movies. And some people, like, that was the first one they saw because they were alive when it came out or whatever. Or they watched it somewhere in between and they haven't necessarily returned to it. After you've watched all the Michael Mann movies, you have to go back and watch Thief.
Yeah, I agree.
Because that's where everything starts. And James Caan in Thief is the, like, you know how they say we're all, you know, we're all made of stars? Like we're all made of things that existed at the original Big Bang and just it all exploded and those elements eventually
formed us. And those elements are in us, yeah.
And James Caan is like the like origin point of all these other Michael Mann characters. And they're all in Thief. Like, they're all in there. Right down to, what are you looking at? I'm looking at you, miss. Like it's all in there.
All right.
He is the Michael Mann romantic. He is the terse Michael Mann professional, a la, you know, Neil McCauley. He is the flamboyant, ready to go completely unhinged Michael Mann crazy guy, a la, you know, Vincent. He is the swooning, pathetic sort of pro, like the Chris Chiharalis. He is the guy that's been let out of prison and this is his last shot character type from Black Hat. He is the obsessive cop in Manhunter. He is the broken serial killer in Manhunter. He is Magua. You know, he is Magua. He is Hawkeye, and he is Chingachgook, and, you know, he is Uncas. You know, and at some point he's probably Sachem. You know, like I mean, he is all of them. They all emanate from Frank, and Caan nails it. You know, it's maybe the best. I mean, it's weird to say that because of movies like Heat and stuff, but it's maybe the best performance in any of his movies. Like, now, I feel like, I don't know that I would have said that, you know, 5-10 years ago, but like, having revisited it over the years and having revisited all of them, I'm like, this might be the best performance in a Michael Mann movie. And it's kind of like, this is the one that contains everything. What a great life. What an interesting career.
He was one of the great, great actors of our time. You know, it's like my brother John or Jimmy. Both of them were part of a storytelling in the mid-70s that people Yes. fell in love with them. They captured the hearts of America. Sonny Corleone captured the hearts of America. John did in Saturday Night Live, Animal House, Blues Brothers. So these great men who captured, or women who capture the hearts of America with their work, they're beautiful. They should always be honored and remembered as men and women who dug the well for the rest of us to drink the water. And Jimmy was one of them. And Michael Mann is definitely a man who dug the well for me. Well, thank you very much for your time, man. And thank you for honoring Thief, Michael, and Jimmy especially.
thank you so much to the incredible contributors of this audio remembrance. Of course, Jim Belushi, Jen Johans, Alexi Toliopoulos, S.A. Cosby, Travis Woods, Jordan Harper, Jedediah Ayers, William Boyle, Bill Gabeary, Sean Burns, Walter Chaw, and Scott Derrickson. Special thanks to Rob Belushi for making this remembrance extra special with the addition of Mr. Jim Belushi. Thanks for listening.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.